Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Have you been wanting to start a meditation practice, but throw your hands up in confusion, wondering where to start? There are so many different types of meditation out there. And of course, nowadays, there is this popularized idea of mindfulness as if that is maybe the only meditation. But what if that's not your style? What if that's not your thing? Well, today on Energy Matters, David and I are going to explore as many different styles of meditation as we can think of that are out there. And by no means would this be an exhaustive list, because meditation, like martial arts or different styles of art, would have hundreds and hundreds of different types of practice. So we're going to kind of bring those into maybe some main topics or headings that a number of different, you know, sub-styles might fit into today and talk about that. So welcome to our show about different types of meditation and how to find one that works for you, and maybe through that explore many different types of meditation. There's no reason that a person can't get acquainted with that inner world and explore all the different ways that you can go deeper into that inner world. So anyway, welcome, David. Great to be here tonight.
It's awesome to be here, wherever you are, whatever time it is. And it's a meditation buffet.
It's for tonight today. For David and I. We're all sneaking one in at the wee hours. We woke up and said, we can't sleep. Let's talk about meditation.
That's right. I sleep meditation.
Yeah. That's right. I meditate while I sleep. And, you know, today, one of the things that got me thinking about this topic and really wanting to talk about it is that if we do take the whole of meditation into just a general idea of, like, what is it about in a very broad sense, I think one thing that we could say meditation is about, no matter what style, is it's about attention. It's about what you do with your attention and learning how to focus your attention or become aware of your attention, be in control of your attention in some way. And, you know, in this world today where there are so many things grabbing for our attention from so many different areas of our life, like it's a constant onslaught of different things vying for our attention. And in fact, not only is it just the world of so much happening and so much stimuli that our attention is going a million directions just to keep up, but we now have this world where there are people actually spending billions of dollars trying to figure out how to capture our attention, how to keep our attention. And our attention and our data and really who we are has been monetized. And I think that it is no accident that as this rise in social media and different media platforms that are vying for our attention has come about, so has this huge rise in meditation. It's like in the public eye now. It's on magazines, you know, different kinds of meditation, mindfulness, what is it, how to meditate, and yoga, you know, how to get a practice where you bring your attention back to yourself. So I think it is like the most important thing right now, which is what is happening with your attention. And of course, in David and I's perspective, where your attention goes, your energy goes. So whoever can grab your attention also grabs your energy, grabs a bit of your creativity, grabs a bit of your juice. And if they can pull it in their direction, they have a bit of you in some ways.
Sorry, I was on Instagram. Were you talking?
Yeah, exactly. And we do that. We multitask. And of course, as meditators, I always like to say I'm really very much into monotasking, because I realize that I can do one thing well or, you know, two or three things poorly. So the more we can grab that attention of our own, focus it, the more we can create and get where we want to go. And, you know, there's a type of meditation that is, has been around for a really long time. It's probably the first one that I was exposed to and started with back at the wee young age of like 14, you know, back before technology, back when we had to do it by candle lights. but the most simple meditation that I have ever heard about is simply the ability to focus. And there's a simple meditation. Maybe you take like a rose and you, you know, put a rose in front of you and you soften your gaze and you focus your attention on that rose. And whenever your attention goes away from that thing, you just bring it back to that thing. Or a candle is another one that was a real fairly common way of an object to use that you could focus your attention on. So you could light a candle, just sit quietly and bring your attention and focus to that candle and notice when your attention gets drawn away and notice how hard it is to stay focused on something just with a soft focus. It's not the intensity of concentration, but the softness of attention and awareness on something and a real noticing of what's really right there. And I remember this story, a friend of mine told me who was doing a meditation exercise, maybe in a group early on with my teacher. And he was doing this type of a meditation with a candle. And of course, in David and I's perspective, wherever your attention goes, your energy goes. So as you bring your full attention to a space and you hold it there, you're also bringing your energy to that space. And as you kind of get stronger in your energy in that space, you can start to work with the energy of that you have. And there's this concept kind of called holding a space. And there's this great story that a friend of mine witnessed that as my teacher was doing, showing this meditation of a candle, as you know, he got the attention got set, he could put his hands up beside the candle and start to hold an energy space. And you know how a candle will flicker or move with the slightest movement of air in a room full of people? He could hold the space to where the candle stopped moving and held steady for 10 to 15 minutes just by holding an energy space. And that's like, you know, you think of concentration meditation, it's like, oh, that's kind of a silly meditation. Where's that going to lead to? That can lead to the ability to focus your energy so powerfully that you could hold a space that changes the energy of a space. And that was what she witnessed. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Cool. Very cool. So is that a name of a type of meditation?
We could call it like focus or a directed attention meditation. I don't know that has a formal name, but
yeah. So it sounds similar to mindfulness, which I've heard Eckhart Tolle say he almost never uses that word because the idea of the mind being full is kind of the opposite of what we're going for here. Maybe emptiness or empty mind would be closer to what we're going for, but everyone calls it mindfulness, which I understand. I understand why it's an attention. You're paying attention. You're fully present with your mind. And that's probably the most popular meditation that exists now is this kind of secular form of mindfulness. And it works. It's great. I practice it a lot. And then kind of a similar type of meditation or a cousin of it would be Vipassana, which is where you start learning how to scan your body up and down. And those are great. I practice them. They're really, really powerful. If you haven't, you should try them. Sometimes for a beginner, they can be a little tough because to just sit still and be so present and focused is really difficult. I had a cousin once who said he tried to meditate with me on the beach once, and he's like, I couldn't pay attention for 2 seconds. Every 2 seconds I wandered, I could not pay attention. So these days mindfulness is in. You do see it on like the cover of Time and Yoga Journal and everywhere. And it's this practice of paying attention to your breath, paying attention to your body, paying attention to the moment, to the room that you're in, to your sensations. And that's as simple as it is, it's freaking hard. It can be very difficult.
Our mind likes to wander.
It loves to wander.
So mindfulness is that ability to observe the mind, really, and watch it, and watch the thoughts. And I think that one thing about that type of meditation, and I would say that that's a little different than focusing your attention on an object and holding, you know, your attention on an object, where I think mindfulness as a focusing inward to the thoughts and being self-aware and the body changes. I think that the thing about mindfulness is it does bring you back to the body. It is one of those meditations that kind of brings you into yourself. Where one way that I've always broken meditations out into, separate them out to describe the difference, would be an in-body style meditation versus like an out-of-body style meditation. And of course, mindfulness is a very present oriented in-body meditation, or one where you notice your breath brings you into the body.
Yeah, if you've ever done Zen, it's very similar. And in Zen, a lot of times you'll focus your breath on the hara, or that space around your belly button, and you breathe into the stomach. And in Zen, actually, often they'll only close their eyes partially. So they're kind of, you're still present, aware of the physical world around you and the inner world at the same time. And in Zen, what I used to do, we would also do walking meditation. So we'd go outside and walk, and you'd have to pay attention to every step that you were taking. And they would come around, and if you agreed, you would nod, they would wipe any dust off your shoulder and then smack you with a stick. That was always fun. Keep you awake. I loved that. It didn't hurt too much, but just enough so you weren't falling asleep, because falling asleep in meditation is very, very common, especially if you're doing mindfulness. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people, they start with mindfulness or secular forms of mindfulness because that's what's popular, that's what's available, right? But for them, it could be difficult or boring, and they're not really aware of how to process emotion in that space, or the question arises, like, what do I do with my thoughts, you know, when they arise? What do I do with the energy that I'm in? And a lot of those questions don't necessarily get answered. So they sit there, they get frustrated or bored, and then they get up and quit. And so mindfulness is a strong, incredible practice. I would say it has its roots in the teachings of the Buddha. But it's not the only one. And so we're going to explore some other meditation styles today as well, and kind of go through and share them as we go along here. You get to choose. You get to choose and go with it. I'll just say one more thing about Zen. So I would say Zen and mindfulness are kind of like first cousins. They're similar, but they're not exactly the same. And in Zen, it's this incredible, this focus on simplicity. Simplicity. It's like when you stay at a Zen monastery, or I stayed at what was called Bodhi Zendo, this place in India, you rake the leaves, you rake the garden, you wash the dishes, right? You prune the trees. It's like this simplicity and connection to life that it seems from the outside very boring, but from the inside, when you're really present, it's beautiful, and it's anything but boring. With mindfulness, Zen, focus, I think they all are similar. They kind of are in a very similar vibration. And then we have meditations that are more actionable, like mantra, right?
Right.
Where you're repeating a word or a phrase. If you're stuck in traffic, you might have a mantra. Traffic mantra.
That's cheated.
I think almost every religion in the world has mantras. they just might call them different things. Mm-hmm. What is it in Christianity? Is it like, what, maybe Hail Marys would be considered?
The Hail Mary, I think, yeah, would be a type of a mantra, definitely. You know, the Lord's Prayer could be a mantra if you were to say it over and over, you know, in a setting. I think the thing with a mantra is it is something that starts to be repetitive over and over, and it's got a certain intonation that repeats. It's got a certain kind of energy to it. Yeah.
It reminds me of like, it, you know, when they play the African drums over and over and over for a really long period of time, you start to lose yourself in it. It's kind of similar in that regard. You just say the same words over and over. When I lived in India, they practice mantra, the Hare Krishnas in particular. Not only Hare Krishnas, but in Hinduism, a lot of different sects will do like Hare Ram, Hare Ram, that Ram, Ram, Hare Hare, they go. It's all the name of God in different forms. Mm. And I've been a part of it before. It was going on for hours and hours. I was like, oh my God. There was this place where they were going in Rishikesh where I lived 24 hours a day. So other people would come in and they would never stop the chain. They would just pass the instruments over to the next person and keep going. That was wild.
And I think the rhythmic nature of those kinds of things put you in a certain trance. So they take you to this different place and this different energy. That's part of the point.
Yeah, transcendental meditation.
Transcendental is probably one of the most well heard of meditations and probably least attempted, given the number of people that have heard of it. Everybody's heard of it. I don't know what percent of people have actually done it.
There's a lot of celebrities that do it.
Yeah, it's having a resurgence, right?
Yeah. Howard Stern talks about it a lot. Jerry Seinfeld, the hedge fund manager, Ray Dalio, says it's a huge part of his success. He's been doing it since the 70s. There's a lot of people that credit their success to TM.
Yeah.
I used to live in the ashram next to the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi Ashram in India, where he taught the Beatles TM.
Oh, funny. Yeah, that really came over in the 70s, I think it was, wasn't it?
That's right. It's probably mostly because of the Beatles, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Om, right? The mantra Om. So you go to yoga class, at the end of yoga, everyone chants Om.
Right,
and that is a powerful one. I do enjoy that. Like when I do that, I can feel the vibration in the body. It relaxes you. It brings you into this trance. And a lot of people don't know this, but it's actually the proper way is AUM, not OM. So the A stands for creation. So it starts in the throat, right? And then in the mouth, the U, which is life or preservation. And then the lips close, which is destruction. So it's this cycle of om, om. Mm. It's almost the cycle of birth, life, and death. And in Hinduism, those are personified by three gods. Let's see if I could get them right. I believe it's Brahma, the creator, Vishnu, the preserver, and Shiva, the destroyer. So, and there's a saying in the Upanishads, I believe it is, the Indian text, that out of the one thing comes the 10,000 things. So, you get first there's like the one infinite energy, then there's maybe you get three gods, then you get and the multiplication is infinite, but it all comes from one, which is fascinating because that's like the Big Bang. Cosmology in Western cosmology, it's similar in a lot of Western religions. At first there was just one, and then there was two, and then four. You'll see that in a lot of stories and mythologies. So now you know what Om means, and you can be the cool person at yoga.
Or at a dinner party.
Or at a dinner party.
At a cocktail party. Yeah, very interesting. And that's a real common connection people have with meditation. Like if you just jokingly tell someone, it's time to meditate. Very often they'll sit with their legs crossed, they'll put their fingertips together, and then they'll say Om.
So those are mudras.
Parodying it. Right.
Yeah. When you touch different fingers, it's supposed to connect different kind of energy channels.
Yeah.
There's a whole like a yogic science behind
system
that.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, yeah, okay.
No, it's all of these different like meditations have such deep roots where it's something that has been practiced for thousands of years in many cases. So it has been, I don't know if perfected is the right word, but let's say the stuff that doesn't work has fallen away and the stuff that tends to work tends to probably stay with it.
Yeah. Maybe there are some really bad styles that died out.
Right. Exactly. But he tried some things that didn't work out so well.
Laying on a bed of nails, meditating.
Yeah. Didn't catch on. I don't know why. I don't know why that didn't catch on.
So weird. It's such a good one.
It's such a good one.
Just like walking over coals at a Tony Robbins event.
Right.
And then there are more energetic styles of meditation, right? Some of the work that we do, where you start to become aware of energy, maybe you work with chakras or energy fields or visualization. Visualization has become really big as well, because when you visualize something in your mind, you know, your brain believes it, and then your body believes it. Your body has a hard time telling the difference between an image and physical reality. And I know this to be a fact now, because I have a friend that was just visiting from Bali, and he brought a virtual reality headset. And man, you put this thing on, I was floating above the Earth at the International Space Station. And that was real. I was nauseous, Cody. I was like, oh my God, I was scared. There was one game, I was standing on the edge of a building looking down, and I was like, seriously scared. I could not tell the difference between that and reality. It was so trippy. So that was externally induced, right? But in visualization, we internally induce images to relax us. So, and visualization is cool. I think it's great, but kind of a step past visualization would be energy work, where you're not just imagining an image just for the sake of wanting something to be a certain way, but you start to see things.
Right.
The energy.
Yeah. And that's a big different step in meditating. Yeah. So I think visualization became popular maybe even before mindfulness, because things like The Secret and these different like Law of Attraction, which there's many other laws, right? But the Law of Attraction, of course, captured the imagination of our culture. And visualization was a way to get what you want. So it became this thing that, you can get what you want through visualization, which I don't know that that's the highest form of using that, because I think visualization inwardly to become who you want might be more powerful, to kind of get to being in alignment with something greater than yourself could be very powerful. I'm not saying that getting what you want isn't good. It's just there's that idea of visualization for creating is, I think, much deeper than it got kind of play in the media. And it's and it is the foundation of energy working meditation, because starting to see energy is a visual thing. And like you say, that big step beyond imagining something, like creating what you want to see and creating what you want to get and seeing what is, which is the goal, I think, of more of a energy intuitive aligned meditation, is starting to see what is, to take off the illusion of the way things appear and look behind that to the way what is actually there energetically.
And sometimes we'll use images as almost placeholders for the energy, because you have to start somewhere. So you might go, all right, I want you to imagine a candle, imagine a rose, right? You can start to imagine a tree, and then let it start to personify the energy of whatever it is that you're going through. Hey, this might be how all the gods and goddesses were created in all the different religious traditions. Because I see them as personifications of certain kinds of energies, right? So maybe Apollo is a personification of a certain kind of power, and who's the Greek goddess of love? I'm forgetting, Aphrodite, right? So it's like the personification of that energy. So we imagine an image, and then it starts to fill with energy. that's less imagined. It's actually there. We're just starting to look at it in front of us, and it's taking a form. And then in the Indian texts, there's this, man, when I lived in India, I saw this beautiful drawn photo. I can't remember how old it is, but it's pretty darn old, of the nadis, or energy channels in the body. Mm. There's something like 86,000 of them. There's this incredible map of the energy channels. And you'll see that in Tai Chi and Qigong and Chinese medicine, acupuncture, the meridian points in yoga, the chakras. In Hawaii, they have the picos, they're kind of like the chakras. You'll see it in almost every tradition, different energy
centers. Ways to represent, yeah, the spiritual energy aspect of oneself.
Yeah.
And you just threw in a couple different types of meditation. You know, Qigong or Tai Chi, and even movement in Zen, there's a whole type of meditation where there's movement that happens and the body is engaged in either rhythmic or just intentional movement that gets the energy flowing in a certain way. And it's a meditative form. So not all meditation is sitting down, concentrating, and certainly not all sitting down cross-legged. In fact, the meditation we teach, just sit in a chair upright. And it's actually more important to have your feet kind of planted and to be upright and kind of sit tall as you meditate and let the energy really flow through you and move through the body.
So, I was teaching a class recently and half the class laid down and I let them, but inwardly I was like, you're not going to meditate with me here. You're going to
fall asleep.
You're going to fall asleep, which is what one person did.
Yeah.
Started breathing heavy. And yeah, it's your body just, you take off. It's pretty difficult at the beginning stages of meditation to go deep meditating while laying down. And a lot of people will, it's almost like, it's like when you go to eat sugar, you're like, well, I'm just going to have a little bit. So when you lay down, you're like, well, I'm going to meditate. I'm just tired, right? And that's endless. The body will always come up with excuses to like try to get out of really sitting still and sitting upright. And I've taught thousands of people. I've watched people and I could feel the energy in the room. Like the moment we're getting to a place where something that hurts is coming up, or there's mental resistance to the moment, you know, that mental resistance, like, oh, I need to get out of this. I need to solve this mental equation that's looping in my mind. I just watch them. The moment they hit that, you can see the squinting on their face, right? And then they find something to itch on their body,
right,
or their legs to adjust. All of a sudden, like their leg is going to fall off because it's been 7 minutes. They have to move it. I've been through that too. When I used to do a lot of Vipassana meditation retreats, which we could talk about, but it's important to sit still. Because that's that uncomfortability is usually you're getting to something.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how you can start to work toward that thing and then the energy gets real intense and that discomfort will just move through the room and it's like people will adjust or make noise. And, you know, some people will just go unconscious. So they'll just kind of go out and then others will start. Yeah. And they'll just nod down. And then, you know, half the people might do that and half start to fidget. But both are a reaction to not so half, wanting to look at something.
You know? Half the room is scratching their neck like a crack addict, like, get me out of here. And the other half is just fast asleep.
Just conked out.
No, and not and then a little not less half. Than half. Then
probably
there's someone.
Right.
Then there's someone in the middle who's like, I'm totally blissed out, man. Right. I don't have any pain. And they're just tripping. They're like floating on the ceiling somewhere, which it used to be me.
Yeah.
And
we say half, and I mean, we're joking because sure. Obviously 80% of the people are right there doing it. And then 20% of the people are hitting the struggles.
Yeah. Or the other way around.
Whatever. Yeah.
Depends on the class.
I like the 80-20 rule. So we'll give the benefit of the doubt to the 80 that are there.
Yeah.
We all have to push through that, right? That's part of meditating past that point of whatever that stop is.
And yeah. Well, in Vipassana meditation, if you go on a 10-day retreat, which they're really cool. So Vipassana is a style where you start watching your breath, scanning your body, definitely a form of mindfulness. and it's very arduous. I mean, you're like inspecting every inch of your body slowly over hours up and down. And whoa, is that painful? But you know, there's moments where you find like a chunk of pain maybe in your shoulder, and you just go into it and it'll start to move around in your body, which is very trippy. Because we are programmed to believe that if there's a painful spot, it can't move because that's where the pain lives. Mm-hmm. But if you really sit still, it'll start to move because it's more energetic than you thought, which is right. Quite trippy. So in those retreats, they'll ask you to sit still for an hour without making a single adjustment or movement for three times a day for an hour. Like, you can if you absolutely have to, but they ask you to sit totally still for 10 days doing this, right? And it's brutal sometimes because like things are in serious pain. Your mind is freaking out. It's a pretty cool thing to experience though.
But it pushes you through that pain, right, to the other side of it, if you sit long enough.
No, you just have a breakdown and quit.
Well, that too.
No, I'm just kidding. Yes, hopefully. Yes, that's the goal. And I think that's in the mythology of the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. It, you know, all the demons came at him, tempting him. The goddess Mara, I think it was the goddess of like illusion. Right, and all of this energy comes at you, and it's like tempting you to react, right. Tempting you to give up your space, tempting you to fight, to resist. That's what it wants to do. And for you listening to this, for us meditators, it might not be a massive demon. It might just be resistance, a mild form of resistance. Right, but maybe that's just the tip of the iceberg. Maybe there is a mountain of energy underneath it that you didn't realize, and you just experience it as frustration or mental discomfort. So it's so important to sit through it.
Right.
Doesn't matter what form of meditation. If you're doing a mantra, you might get irritated as the mantra is going and then continue, right? If you're doing energy work, you become aware of energy. It's the same. Mindfulness is the same. Zen, and the technique, there doesn't quite matter, right? There are many different paths up the mountain. They all lead to the same place at the top if you practice in earnest. And then, you know, there's also devotional meditation where you really get into your heart and you just pray, which we didn't mention.
That's well, and that's one of the ones I was going to, is kind of what we might call spiritual or prayer as a meditation, which is very powerful. But I think the thing of what you're talking about that, about all those distractions that come up is they're all trying to grab your attention and get your attention into something to where you act on it and your mind gets engaged that you have to, you know, scratch that itch or adjust to get out of pain. And in one of the things I think in meditation that we recognize is that so much of those physical little distractions are actually energy. They aren't actually real. And if you can push through them to the other side, then you can see what's behind it, what's behind the tip of that iceberg, which is grabbing for your full attention, right? It's grabbing to take you out of the meditation. And so many people, when we say meditation, you know, or you should meditate, in one way it sounds easier. Many people are like, yeah, well, you know I should, but there's an excuse that comes up. But meditation is really hard. And I think if we get this idea that the point of meditation is to push through that initial challenge, not in a physical, it's not like lifting weights, right? It's a mental struggle. But if you stay with it, and kind of push through that initial wall, you get to another level or another space where things are different, right? I think a lot of people stop at that first kind of tough spot, or maybe this, you know, within, it's not like they stop the first, very first thing, but they get caught in that first tough spot mm-hmm. without any direction. And it's easy to just give up because there's no way to see the other side. Unless you're somehow kind of given some tools or maybe guided to the other side or encouraged in some way.
I, I think that's why it's very important to find the meditation style that works best for you. And for me, at different points in my life, that meant different styles. So at one point it was Vipassana, at another point it was Zen, at another point it was Vedanta, which we haven't talked about, but which is similar to Zen. It's a non-dual teaching out of India, a very ancient one, essentially that says that everything is one, that every form that you see is an illusion. And the goal is to find out who you truly are. So it's a kind of a form of self-inquiry where maybe you sit and say, who am I? What am I really made of? I'm not these thoughts, I'm not this body. And you go inward and inward and inward until you find the, what they would call it, the big S for self. First, the little S for self would be the ego, the me, my, this is my life. The big S would be the one consciousness that permeates everything. Which one of my favorite philosophies and styles, it's really, really cool if you haven't explored it. So we go inwards and we start to find out who we are. And as we do that, there's some turbulence. There tends to be turbulence because we're complicated human beings with pain. And, you know, there's pain in our genetics, in our hereditary line. There's pain in our society. There's pain around the people that we interact with. And so there tends to be some of this turbulence when we start to meditate. And it doesn't matter what form you do it in, but you should enjoy that form of meditation. And one of my kind of pet peeves a little bit, Cody, with what's happening with meditation now is that there's this movement, let's strip away everything from meditation except the set part we can measure very clearly scientifically. Mm-hmm. Let's only use the words that don't offend anybody. And let's just use this one part. And we're going to use it for the sake of making ourselves more productive, right? And this is what we're going to do. It's become another tool in the tool belt of me becoming the best version of myself so I can make the most amount of money and be the calmest version of myself.
Right. Which I think that's what I was getting at with the visualization coming in first. It was the secret and it was all about creating what I want. And now it's kind of moved into the world of mindfulness, which is secular, but there, you know, if you listen to Eckhart, there's definitely a deep spiritual underpinning to why you would go in that direction. It's to find that deepest sense of self, I don't know what word we want to use, the immortal or eternal self, and to see it materialized or used for materialism to self-improvement for getting something, not self-improvement for deeper inquiry and understanding of self. That's always there, apparently.
I think it's an expression of a certain worldview. Right, a certain kind of consciousness that's very pervasive now. And unfortunately, what it does is I think it stops people from exploring a deeper spiritual part of themselves. And you know, I think this show, after 50 episodes, if it's hopefully done anything for you, it's opened you up to some of those spiritual realms and dimensions and possibilities. And not in a dogmatic way, like this is the fourth chakra and this is the shape of it. And this is how you have to pray with it, you know, not in that way, but in a, hey, here's a possibility you decide for yourself through your own experience. And I think there's this energy that says, no, you don't get to decide through your own experience. We're going to tell you what the best form is or what is kind of inside the bounds of our intellectual, materialistic worldview. And if you're outside of those bounds, then we're going to stigmatize what you do. I was making a joke. I don't know if I shared this on the show yet. I was making a joke in my class recently. I saw this movie called Third Eye Spies. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it, but you did message me about it. I need to watch it. Yeah.
We had one of our guests, Dr. Dean Radin.
Radin,
on the show, is in this film. It's on Amazon. And it's about how the CIA use psychic spies to spy on, you know, the Russians, whatever. The most interesting part for me is that, you know, this has been a part of every culture and throughout all of human history, pretty much, this idea that there's spirit, that you can connect in non-local ways, right? It's part of most cultures. And these scientists, there's some very, very smart scientists, they start testing people and they start to find, oh, these guys have certain abilities. And what's the first thing that they do? Weaponize them.
Right.
Oh my God, there's this incredible, mysterious connection between us all. How can we weaponize it? And I think that's what the intellectual mind does sometimes. So, you know, as you're opening up, don't weaponize your awareness. That's a side note. We'll do a whole nother episode about that.
That's a good title for a talk.
It is. We'll do a whole one on there. But I know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is a part of the mind that the question is, well, how do I use this, or what's this good for, right? And meditation is good for many, many things that, of course, nowadays is being discovered in terms of health and well-being and just inner development.
And tantra.
And tantra, that's another another form.
Meditation.
But, yeah, another meditation. But meditation is good for many, many things. But if you approach it in terms of, well, how can I use this or make it serve me, rather than just go deep into the process and see what arises, it's those are two different things.
Yeah,
because the part of you that you're trying to wake up from through meditation is the same part that wants to use it and direct how it's being used. That's mm-hmm. the paradox
it or is.
The struggle.
That is the paradox. Do you know that one of our most popular early episodes of the show is called Tantra Gurus and Healthy Spirituality?
Right.
And I
sex sells even in spirituality.
Yeah. And so Tantra is a huge umbrella word. Sex and sexuality is just one very small piece of it, just like stretching is a very small piece of yoga, but of course, we make everything shallow in our culture, so we always focus on that. But there is a beautiful part of Tantra that has to do with sexuality and bringing awareness into that space. And I think it's fantastic. So that is also a kind of meditation, which as it should be.
Right.
Yeah. So really, you can bring anything you bring awareness to can become a meditation. You can be painting, and that's your meditation. You could be jogging, you could be making love, you can be building something, you could be sailing on the ocean, you could be surfing, you could be skiing, right? All of it. And there's a certain point where you realize all of life is a meditation when you just remove the judgmental, critical mind and you take it out of the equation.
Well, and even like contemplation is this form of meditation, which is kind of intellectual inquiry, but with an open mind. So rather than reductionism, it might be more expansive, but it's still contemplative and it's still using the intellect. So it removes the critical and opens up to the more intuitive mind.
So what's the best form of meditation? What should we do, Cody?
You know, I think, you know, the beautiful thing, I was just thinking when you were talking that the beautiful thing these days, like, in the past, if you wanted to try these different meditations, how would you do that? You would have to find different teachers and go to them and say, can I try your meditation? Now you have an app like Insight Timer that has thousands of meditations. You're going to have all of these different styles represented in that one place.
Yeah,
and you can go there and try it for free.
Yeah, when I upload our podcast there and my meditations on Insight Timer, there you have to fill out a form and choose the style of yours,
right.
So they can catalog it, and there are hundreds.
Hundreds of different categories.
And scrolls.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have, through this technology, we have this opportunity to explore and touch and try all these different experiences that otherwise would have been, you know, a pilgrimage to get to some of them. And you might have had to hear them third and fourth hand down a line where someone just kind of heard something and passed on the little part that stuck for them and the little. And so there's this beautiful time where we have these tools to kind of try all these different things.
Yeah.
We definitely teach a particular style, if you will. I don't know that we could name it other than it leads into energy working and energy awareness and kind of moving your perception over into the intuitive mind and kind of looking at the world through that lens. Not in the sense of getting rid of the intellect, but it's learning to kind of balance both, to see things and then process that information and come up with, you know, an articulate.
As I always tell my students, you know, we often try to solve our problems by analyzing them.
Right.
And that solves certain kinds of problems really well, but it doesn't solve everything in life. Like, is this the right partner or the right career? Who am I? What is life about? The analytical mind may not be able to solve those problems because they solve through healing and wholeness, not through breaking things down into pieces.
Right. I think even solving problems of advancing into new ideas, the analytical mind has a limit because the analytical mind tends to process what it already knows to come up with a solution. And if it's looking at something new, or if we're trying to bring something new in the world, if you listen to most people's stories of how something kind of birthed in their mind, it was more like an inspiration and an insight that they had, which is an intuitive mind movement. And then they were maybe strong enough in their analytical mind to know how to incorporate that or act on it or use it. But most new ideas come as an inspired flash or insight, which is all intuitive mind, really.
I had a good idea once.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah, I don't remember.
I got it. I've been doing this long. I got that joke before you even put in the short pause there. I did. I'm sorry. I ruined the punchline. I got it too fast.
David had an idea for a moment. My best ideas do come in meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think it's interesting that somehow in this current kind of world, and maybe ever since the Enlightenment, where everything's kind of moved more towards the scientific mind, the intellect has gained ground and validity, even though at the core of any scientific jump, there was first an insight and an inspiration that saw things differently and new, that wasn't rooted in the analytical mind. It was just able to take that information
and there's
something with it.
And there are some problems maybe on the scientific level, material level, we may not solve for hundreds or thousands of years or eons and eons. You know, there are these paradoxes of existence that maybe we can only experience through our consciousness that even go beyond the mind.
Right.
I, for one, don't want to wait for somebody else to tell me, hey, you can't experience any of this yourself. Wait till we figure it out on a material level. Sometimes you close your eyes and you're transported to the center of the galaxy and everything is one and connected and you see it all and it's this infinite paradoxical mystery and you're like, holy cow. And then the LSD wears off and you come back. You don't need LSD. All you need to do is meditate. I'm kidding. But those experiences are available there because the entire universe is truly inside you. And when you start to meditate deeply, it doesn't have to take years to get to a place like that. Sometimes you just pop open. It happens. And I don't think it matters what type of practice you do. And honestly, when I teach now, I don't even know what my style is other than it's my own style in synthesizing all the experience and styles that I've practiced. And I always try to meet the students where they're at and try to find out what is it that these people, this group, or this person needs most. What are they really here for versus me telling you what you need to know, what you should know? Let's draw out your next step for you. And the way I've been defining meditation, I just created a 7-part series called The Fundamentals of Meditation. And the way I define it is it's the cultivation of awareness at its kind of basic form. You're allowing your presence to expand to focus. And you cultivate consciousness in that way, and you start to disidentify from your thoughts so much and recognize that you can be more of just that awareness in that space that they come into and that they go out of. And the same with your emotions and energy. They just come by, they pass by. So yeah, thanks for passing by great. Today, everyone.
It's yeah, thank you so much for passing by. And so you just mentioned that you had a 7-part Fundamentals of Meditation series that you created. Just started your meditation school.
Yeah, so this is something that came for me in meditation, which is, you know, I teach at different companies and studios and universities, all these different places, and I love it, but there's definitely always a boundary around that space and what I could say. And I have an incredible just like energy of freedom. I always want to be more free. That's why I think why I love to travel so much. I love being in the Himalayas, and I'm taking a group. If this is before October 30th, I'm taking a group to Bhutan. So I created a meditation school, which is an online program where I teach live a couple times a month. So we can come sit and really go deep and work all of these different energies, which is a bit different than what me and you teach, Cody, when we teach intuitive training, which is right. We're really teaching people the intuitive arts, how to read, how to heal,
how to see energy,
way down the woo-woo spiritual path. And it's so fun. And we do that in this space too. Definitely learn how to work energy, allow our abilities to unlock. But the goal isn't necessarily to become like a reader or a healer. It's to really just become more of yourself. And man, I've seen people just make massive changes in their lives by meditating and letting go of some big heavy rock on their chest or some limitation they had since they were 5 or some old pattern of thought around money or just their idea of what life was about. Like, you see these changes, and sometimes they happen in 1 or 2 or 3 meditations, and it could lead somebody down an entirely different path of life. And they were just overriding this energy for a while. They just sat down, closed their eyes. It was right in front of them. The answer, along with the problem, if we want to call it that, it's like a 2-sided coin. They always come together. The energy, right? The resistance and the solution are tied together.
Yeah.
And when we sit, we get through the resistance and then we get to the answer.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we could reframe that problem as the question. And when we find that right question, we can find that answer.
So, yeah. Cool.
But so yeah, there's the meditation school. And then of course we teach an intuitive training, like you say, a little bit farther down the woo-woo spectrum. We're planning to do
2020,
do a new one. Yeah.
Clear seeing. But I'll put a link. Let's put a link for the meditation school in the show notes if you want to come sit. And we could probably talk about 30 more meditation styles. I think we hit a lot of the big ones today. I hope you find something that works for you if you don't already. And if you have a style, but it's not sitting well with you, give yourself some license to explore. You don't want to be a meditation shopper forever where you just do a little bit here and there and never go deep.
Yeah.
You don't go around digging shallow wells for too long, but you do have to find what works for you. So there's a balance in that.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for hanging with me late in the evening when we recorded this, Cody. And
yeah, it's getting late here. But thanks for showing up and listening to us chat about meditation. And there really is so much more that can be said about meditation. Most of what we do is jump right into the middle of it and create that opportunity to experience it. So if you come to any of our classes, or if you download any of our series, it's going to jump you right into doing it. And that's really where we tend to approach it all from.
So. Put on your swimmies. We go right into the deep end.
We do.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right.
Thanks everyone for listening. Whether you're on YouTube or Insight Timer or iTunes or Spotify, wherever you are, thanks for being here. And we will see you on the next episode.
Yeah, thanks for being here and keep meditating.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters Podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.